Well, it is Mother's Day, as we have talked about, and so we'll start with a few mother's jokes. I like dad jokes, but the mom jokes are fun too. So mother said, was overheard telling her son this, I'm warning you, if you fall out of that tree and break both your legs, don't come running to me. A woman got on a bus with her baby, and the bus driver said, that is the ugliest baby I've ever seen. Ugh. The woman goes to the rear of the bus, sits down, and she's really upset. And she says to the man next to her, that driver just insulted me. And the man said, you go right up there and tell him off. Go ahead, I'll hold your monkey for you. And two children ordered their mother to stay in bed one Mother's Day morning. As she lay there looking forward to breakfast in bed, the smell of bacon floated up from the kitchen. But after a good long wait, she finally went downstairs to see what was taking so long. She found them both sitting at the table eating bacon and eggs. As a surprise for Mother's Day, one of them explained, we decided to cook our own breakfast. And finally, what's the difference between Superman and mothers? Superman's just a superhero now and then, but moms are superheroes all the time. Today we're going to skip ahead in Mark to chapter 8, and here we see Jesus is confronted by the Pharisees once again. We're going to read from Mark chapter 8, verse 11 through 13. When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had arrived, they came and started to argue with him. Testing him, they demanded that he show them a miraculous sign from heaven to prove his authority. When he heard this, he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, why do these people keep demanding a miraculous sign? I tell you the truth, I will not give this generation any such sign. So he got back into the boat and left them, and he crossed to the other side of the lake. So here we have Jesus arriving on the shore and basically being accosted by a group of Pharisees immediately. And they demanded that Jesus perform a sign. Jesus responds to them and says, I tell you the truth, I will not give this generation any such sign. And that's really an oath formula. And so the beginning of that oath, which the English doesn't translate for us and it's not completely clear, but it is there inferred, it basically is saying that may God strike me down if I give this generation a sign that you're asking for. And so Jesus is being very serious when he's saying, I will not give this generation a sign. And you've got to wonder, why is Jesus not willing to give these people a sign? He's been giving signs and miracles all through his ministry. But the reason that he is not giving them this sign is that they're asking for a sign from heaven. And this sign from heaven is an apocalyptic sign. And what they're really asking for is that Jesus will give a signal or some sort of sign that the Jews will have dominance over all other people on earth. They're really a nationalistic idea behind this. They want Jesus to come down and basically lay the hammer down on all the Gentiles and put the Israelites and the nation of Israel back in the driver's seat. That wasn't part of God's plan. God's plan is inclusive of all people, not just one nationality, not just one race. And so God has given all of these other signs to show that he is God in the flesh, God incarnate. But this request that they have asked for goes against God's nature. It goes against what God is standing for in Jesus. Jesus and God believe that humankind is equal at the foot of the cross. And so to demand a sign that says that the Jews are going to conquer all nations is contrary to what Jesus' message was of inclusion. He says this generation, and it's in reference not just to the people, but to the people who are continually defying Jesus and tempting his disciples into shaming them or to leaving him. This generation is that specific group of people who want to trick people and lead them back to themselves so that they can hold on to that power. They can hold on to that noose that they have around the people's neck when it comes to following the traditions of the law. And so these people, this generation, are those institutionalized religious people who are Jesus' adversary. Jesus, again, has given them sign after sign, but they reject them. They reject his divinity. They reject the fact that he is God in the flesh. And instead, they use these signs as ammunition to plot against him. And so because he senses this shift in their hearts, that they're not there to seek the truth anymore, they're there just to plot against him and to ultimately kill him, he changes how he interacts with them. He's not doing things to try to convince them anymore because their hearts are hardened. They're not convincible. They have decided that he is the enemy and they're going to plot ahead with his execution. And so he rebukes this request. He rebukes these people because it's ungodly and it's counter to his mission. As we've seen over and over again, Jesus is inclusive. They have heard his teaching. They have seen his miracles. Yet they still remain stubborn and hard of heart to Jesus' true purpose. Sometimes in life, we seek out a sign from God for something. We're trying to make a decision or we have a dispute. So we ask God for some sign. And oftentimes we're asking in the same way that the Pharisees were asking for a sign from Jesus. Basically, what we're asking for is we want a sign to confirm to ourselves and to other people that we're right and that they're wrong. We want God to show people that we are on the right side of the issue and they are on the wrong side of the issue. The problem with that is that we don't hold a special place in God's favor. We could be right, we could be wrong, but the point is God doesn't go around smiting people because they have done something wrong or said something wrong. And we should be thankful for that. We should be thankful for the grace and the patience that God has given us, and then thankful that he gives grace and patience to other people as well. Even if we're in a situation that we know 100% we are right, it's not always about being right. Now, those of you that know me know that I like to be right. I like facts. And if you know, have spent any time with my family, you know that we often get into arguments about who is right and who is wrong. We can be having a wonderfully engaging conversation, but if someone adds just one little fact that we can pounce on that it's wrong, we're going to jump all over that. And so we could be having this great conversation, but then one fact is misspoken or missaid, and we're on it. And the whole exchange focuses then not on the conversation, not on the heart behind it, but on being right. And if you want to know what recent arguments we've had, just check our Google search history. Because that will give you a very good idea of what we have recently been arguing about. But I don't think that this incessant need to be right is unique to my family. I think all of us, to some degree, have the need to be right. But the need to be right can be destructive to building relationships, because real relationships are based on love and grace. And that means when a person makes a mistake, whether intentionally or not, instead of pouncing on them and correcting them, we can instead see the intent behind the conversation and really get to the heart of the matter. It's wonderfully refreshing to see Jesus as he goes through the Gospels, that he's not pouncing on people when they say things that are wrong. He's not quick to correct the disciples when they say something wrong. He's not quick to correct the woman at the well when she says something wrong. He's giving them love and he's giving them grace. He's giving them forgiveness. He's valuing the relationship he has with them over the need to be right. He doesn't stop and give them a theology lesson every time they mess up. He just loves people. And if we truly love someone, then we should be able to look over their faults, look over those missteps in order to pursue the greater calling of love. And really, who are we called to love? We're called to love everyone. So the next time you're tempted to correct someone, no matter what the situation is, take a pause, take a breath, and think, is this really that important? Next time you're having that conversation with your spouse, with your child, with your parent, with your friend, think about, is it more important to be right, or is it more important to keep this relationship? Because you can't insist on being right all of the time and also have a growing, grace-filled relationship. Try to think of it in terms of, will this matter in an hour? Will this matter in a day? Will this matter a week from now? 99% of the time, it's not going to matter. And so therefore, it's trivial and unnecessary to correct people in all situations. In those situations, it's best to let it be and focus on the relationship and the heart of the conversation instead of our incessant need to be right. And as I preach this message, I've got one finger toward you and four pointing back at me, because this is something that I work on and struggle with as well. But we all need to get to the heart of the matter and value the relationship over valuing being right. If we keep reading in Mark 8, we'll be into verse 14. But the disciples had forgotten to bring any food. They had only one loaf of bread with them in the boat. As they were crossing the lake, Jesus warned them, "Watch out. Beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and of Herod." At this, they began to argue with each other because they hadn't brought any bread. Jesus knew what they were saying, so he said, "Why are you arguing about having no bread? Don't you know or understand even yet? Are your hearts too hard to take it in? You have eyes, can't you see? You have ears, can't you hear? Don't you remember anything at all? When I fed the 5,000 with five loaves of bread, how many baskets of leftovers did you pick up afterward?" 12, they said. "And when I fed the 4,000 with seven loaves, how many large baskets of leftovers did you pick up?" 7, they said. "Don't you understand yet?" he asked them. So Jesus has left the Pharisees and back in a boat with the disciples. Again, Jesus is on the water with the disciples. Again, the disciples are worrying about their physical needs. And again, Jesus is asking the disciples, "Why don't you understand?" In scene after scene, Jesus has shown his power. He's shown his power over nature by calming the storm. He's shown his power over the demons by healing the man who was possessed. He's fed thousands. He's healed many. He's raised a girl from the dead, yet the disciples still don't get it. They still don't understand who Jesus is. After all they have witnessed, Jesus says they still can't see, they still can't hear. But Jesus doesn't yell at them. He has compassion on them. He tells them, "Beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and Herod." Both Herod and the Pharisees have seen the evidence of Jesus' power. They've seen him identify himself as the Messiah, and they've rejected him. And that seed of doubt that they've planted in people can spread like yeast in dough. Just like a little yeast will cause the whole loaf to rise, lies and misinformation spread just as quickly. And the Pharisees and Herod have spread lies about Jesus. They're riling up the people so that they will crucify him in the end. Even after telling his disciples this, even after reminding them of all of these things, they still don't see the significance of who Jesus is or what he can do for them. But going back to our previous part, Jesus doesn't correct them and say, "Guys, get your theology right. You're wrong, 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 wrong." He has compassion on them. He shows them. He teaches them. Don't you understand yet? Over and over and over again, we see Jesus having compassion and patience with the disciples. He cares for their needs and is sitting in the boat with them. And it's often easy for us to get in this situation and think, oh, the disciples, they're so dumb. They're dense. They're stupid. Why don't they get this? But in reality, if we were in the same situation, most likely we'd be with the disciples. They didn't have a framework for understanding the Messiah. They didn't have our advantage of seeing the whole picture. Instead, they're living in the midst of things where things are messy and where things are not clear. And I think we all can relate to being in situations where things are just messy and things are not clear as to what path we should go on. We come to a crossroads and we wonder, which direction should we go, God? That's when we need to remember that Jesus is in the boat with us. He's talking to us just like he talked to the disciples. He's reminding us of how he has been faithful in the past with us in our own lives and in the lives of those in Scripture. But if we're honest, instead of seeing Jesus with us in the boat, many of us are like the disciples complaining that we're hungry and have no bread. We don't acknowledge that Jesus is with us. We don't acknowledge that he's with us, right beside us, ready to and willing to provide for us in his time. And we focus on being hungry. And instead of focusing on being hungry, we need to be focusing on Jesus and the fact that he never leaves us, he never forsakes us, and he is with us even in these times when things are so uncertain. The question is, can we see him? Do we see his provisions? Or do we just focus on trying to get food because we're hungry? That's what the disciples were doing. They were focusing on what they lacked instead of what they had. They had Jesus with them, God in the flesh, but they were focusing on their bellies. They were focusing on getting food. Guys, we have the Holy Spirit living inside of us as believers. We have God with us every single day, every single moment of our lives. And when these things come up, what do we focus on? Unfortunately, most of us fall in line with the disciples and focus on being hungry. Focus on what we don't have instead of focusing on what we do have. And that's the power of God living inside of us. When things go haywire in your life, which they will, we need to remember what Jesus has done for us and what he has done for his followers in the past. Instead of focusing on the negative things that are happening around us, focus on the positive. Focus on the good things that God has provided. And God will provide for you and guide you through this time at just the right time for you. So I encourage you, next time you're feeling blue, next time you're feeling stress, don't focus on the negative. Focus on what God has already done for you in your life. Go back and read Scripture. Read the stories of what Jesus has done for his people over time, how he has been faithful over time. And that will give you the right thing to focus on.
You've been listening to Pastor Kevin Daniels at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.